Hi, I'm Matt Payne, and welcome to 20th Century Revolutions. Episode 1.13, The Hanging of Vasil Levski, Bulgarian Liberation, Part 2. Last time, we ended by following the great precursor of Bulgarian liberation, Georgi Rakovsky, on his journey throughout the Balkans as he began to create a network of revolutionary agents both inside and outside of Ottoman Bulgaria. Today, we will see his work carried on by a generation of younger revolutionaries who will be inspired by the work of Rakovsky, their cool revolutionary uncle, who sadly would be unable to see his project through to its end as he would die of tuberculosis in 1867. Rakovsky had spent the later years of his life as a revolutionary exile living first in the Serbian capital of Belgrade and later in the Romanian capital of Bucharest. And as we noted, both Serbia and Romania were becoming increasingly independent of their nominal Ottoman masters, as Serbia had been able to kick out the last of the Ottoman military from their domains, and then Romania had finally united into one single principality. The increasing autonomy of Serbia and Romania will be very important for our young Bulgarian revolutionaries because, while Bulgaria was still under direct centralized control by the Ottomans, Serbia and Romania were nearly independent at this point, and the leaders of these principalities would often turn a blind eye to anti-Ottoman activity and would allow Bulgarian exiles to carry on their revolutionary planning within their domains. So, in the mid to late 1860s, more and more young revolutionaries were flocking to Bucharest, where they hoped to join Georgi Rakovsky's cohort of revolutionary émigrés hiding out in the Romanian capital. And in the final year of his life, Rakovsky made one of his biggest contributions to the Bulgarian struggle when he formed the Bulgarian Secret Central Committee in 1866. This committee was one of the first organizations to fully dedicate themselves to putting together armed Cheti war bands, and these war bands were sent into Bulgaria to launch uprisings against local Ottoman officials within a now more organized revolutionary structure. In addition to launching uprisings in Bulgaria, the Secret Central Committee also began to develop a political wing, which would, throughout 1867, begin sending out feelers to different foreign governments such as Russia, Prussia, and France, asking for aid and support. So, even though Rakovsky would sadly die later that year in the fall of 1867, he would leave behind many committed disciples, or apostles, if we want to go ahead and start using the language of the Bulgarian revolutionaries. And Rakovsky's apostles would energetically carry on his work in the decade following his death. And there are really three primary figures within this younger generation of Bulgarian revolutionaries who will emerge as the new leaders of the struggle and who will come to be some of the most revered national heroes in Bulgaria. And in fact, they are so revered that it is at times a bit difficult to sort through what is fact and what is myth, because in later years, the competing legacies of these revolutionary heroes will often be deployed by upcoming political regimes, wishing to exploit the fame of these men in an effort to heighten the legitimacy of their own rule. So, I will try my best to get it right, but please let me know if anyone notices me falling a bit too hard for any of the propaganda and myth surrounding these figures. All right, with all that said, let's introduce Lubin Keravelov, Hristo Botev, and of course, Vasil Levski. And I do want to start with the most famous of these three, and really the most famous figure of this entire period, the great revolutionary martyr Vasil Levski. Vasil Ivanov Kunchev was born in the town of Karlovo, which lies in the foothills of the Balkan Mountains in central Bulgaria, an area that will later become a stronghold for revolutionary freedom fighters amongst the Cheti guerrilla war bands and Hajduk mountain bandits. Like many of his future revolutionary comrades, Vasil was born into a family within the emerging Bulgarian middle class that had really begun to grow in the mid-1800s. Much like Georgi Rakovsky, As a young man, Vasil began his education within the Orthodox Church, originally going to school to become a priest, and after graduating, he would join a monastery in 1858 at the age of 21. However, the monastic life would not really take for the young fiery Bulgarian, and he would quickly run off to Belgrade in 1862 as he answered Rokossovsky's call for revolutionary fighters to join the 1st Bulgarian Legion in Serbia. As we know from last episode, the 1st Bulgarian Legion only really took part in one brief skirmish during an anti-Ottoman riot in Belgrade. But Vasil did distinguish himself while training with the Legion, and during this brief skirmish, Vasil proved himself to be a fearless fighter. And it was during the Belgrade riots that he earned the nickname Levski, which means lion-like. After Rokossovsky's legion was disbanded, Levski would elect to continue fighting as he joined up with an experienced Hajduk leader who put together a small Cheti war band that would re-enter Ottoman Bulgaria to engage in small-scale guerrilla attacks. When Georgi Rokossovsky was putting together his Bulgarian legion in Belgrade, he had recruited a handful of Hajduks from inside Bulgaria because these Hajduks, as Robin Hood-esque mountain bandits, had a decent amount of experience in armed combat, having become pretty good at launching raids against Ottoman officials over the years. And this would become a trend as many revolutionary leaders would continue to recruit Hajduks to lead their Cheti war bands and to help organize guerrilla attacks within Ottoman Bulgaria. So, after Rokossovsky's Bulgarian Legion was disbanded, one such Hajduk, who had been the leader of a regiment within the Legion, would lead a group of fighters back into Bulgaria in order to continue the struggle against the Ottomans. And the young Vasil Levski decided to throw his lot in with this Hajduk. And while serving under him, Levski would once again prove himself to be a valiant fighter. Though, as with most revolutionary actions up to this point, this Cheti warband would quickly be defeated, and Levski would have to escape back into Serbia. Then, after bopping around for a bit, Levski would actually spend a few months in jail after his uncle, who had originally helped him get a job at the monastery, reported him to the Ottoman authorities. However, due to some good connections on the outside, Levski would be released, and once out, he officially relinquished his religious affiliations. And then he actually settled down for a few years, working as a teacher near his hometown. Levski's time spent as a teacher would be somewhat transformative, as he began to find that he could connect with everyday Bulgarians much more effectively when he really put the time in to develop connections amongst a given community. These genuine connections will, for Levski, lay in stark contrast to the Cheti attacks that he had been taking part in, which pretty much never inspired the broader popular response that revolutionary leaders such as Georgi Rokossovsky were hoping to arouse. So, Levski found his work as a teacher to be very fulfilling, and he began to understand the importance of making deep and genuine connections within a given community. And he also found that once this trust had been built up, people could be fairly receptive to revolutionary ideas. But after a few years, Levski would begin to get a bit restless again, and he would answer the call of his hero, Georgi Rokossovsky, to serve as the standard bearer for Paniat Hitov's Cheti warband. As we noted last week, Paniat Hitov was a very experienced Hajduk leader who had begun to work closely with Rokossovsky in the years following the disbanding of the Bulgarian Legion, with Rokossovsky directing revolutionary activity as an exile in Bucharest, and Hitov launching guerrilla attacks against Ottoman authorities within Bulgaria itself. And critically, we also noted that Paniat Hitov has potentially the largest mustache ever recorded. Like, seriously, go check out Hitov's picture at 20thCenturyRevolutions.com. The man's mustache is a true work of art. But for Vasil Levski, this experience fighting under the legendary Hajduk Paniat Hitov would once again highlight the persistent lack of participation amongst everyday Bulgarians. Because after Hitov and his small warband launched an attack against Ottoman garrisons in Bulgaria, they were quickly defeated, and Levski would once again be forced to escape back into Serbia. However, Ottoman officials would eventually track Levski down, and he would spend some more time in prison. Then, after being released from prison, Levski would make his way to Romania, where he would join up with the community of exiles who were continuing the work of the now recently deceased Georgi Rakovski. When Levski arrived in Romania, he somewhat notably decided to not join the new Cheti warband that was being formed amongst the revolutionary exiles living there at the time. This decision was partially due to some health issues Levski was experiencing, but the decision to temporarily opt out of the Cheti strategy also points to a personal transformation that Levski was currently experiencing. Levski had now taken part in several different armed actions against Ottoman authorities in Bulgaria, and all of these attacks were easily squashed because they were, well, tiny. One of the ideas behind the Cheti strategy was to use small, guerrilla-style attacks to inspire broader resistance amongst the people, specifically amongst the oppressed Bulgarian peasantry. However, there was yet to be any sign whatsoever that one of these larger uprisings would ever erupt. Levski, being the perceptive dude that he was beginning to notice that the people were just really not that into it. And Levski had also just spent the past few years as a teacher working with everyday Bulgarians and learning about their struggles and their needs. Through these experiences as a revolutionary fighter and as a teacher, Levski was beginning to conclude that the people were not going to just magically join up with dangerous and potentially suicidal revolutionaries who were just kind of throwing their lives away in what were at this point pretty pointless attacks against the Ottomans that weren't getting anyone anywhere. This emerging perspective of Levski's will become very important over the next several years, as he will come to the conclusion that for widespread revolution to really break out across Bulgaria, revolutionary leaders would have to cultivate widespread support for that revolution amongst the broader population. So Levski's strategy will gradually change as he moves away from taking part in these pointless lightning attacks and begins to focus instead on network building and on revolutionary education. So when Levski arrived in Romania, he found himself somewhat at odds with the emigre leaders living in Bucharest, who were still attached to Rakovski's old strategy of blindly sending Cheti warbands into Bulgaria on what were essentially suicidal missions. And it was upon his arrival in Romania that Levski would become friends with a young revolutionary poet who was beginning to come to some pretty similar conclusions about the need for a strategy change. And so, it is now time to introduce Hristo Botev, our second revolutionary leader of the post-Rakovski generation. Hristo Botev's background was similar to Levski, as he was born to a middle-class family in a town right near Levski's hometown in central Bulgaria within the Balkan Mountains. Botev's father was a teacher and minor figure of the early Bulgarian national revival. So, from a very young age, Botev was steeped in the literary movement that had grown around Georgi Rakovski. As a teenager, Botev had been sent off to boarding school in Odessa, at this point a part of the Russian Empire, which you may remember was the birthplace of the Felikia Tyria. Botev and boarding school did not really get along, though, and the young Bulgarian quickly began skipping his classes. Though Botev was not skipping his classes to, like, go out drinking with his friends or anything like that. Instead, Botev spent his time in libraries reading radical Russian literature and poetry. And in fact, it was during this time that Botev began to write his own poetry, actually composing one of his more famous poems called To My Mother at the ripe young age of 16. Along with his self-education, Botev also began to make connections with early Russian revolutionaries, many of whom were associated with the Narodists or Narodniks, the radical populists who were at this point developing their characteristically Russian form of agrarian socialism, in which the peasant commune was meant to serve as the basis of a future classless society. And the Narodists would, after many twists and turns, actually go on to form the nucleus of the Socialist Revolutionaries, or the SRs, who will eventually become the primary rival socialist party to the Bolsheviks during the early revolutionary period before Soviet dominance was fully solidified. These early connections with Russian agrarian socialism would stamp Botev's politics, and his writings would go on to be heavily influenced by anarchist and socialist ideas. And Botev's brand of agrarian populism would come to be very influential in later years, as Bulgaria will actually go on to have one of the most successful peasant political parties during the early 20th century, a time when socialist parties were typically dominated by urban working class politics that too often ignored the needs of agrarian peasants. Bulgaria will be an exception to this rule, as an agrarian party representing the interests of peasants will come to dominate Bulgarian politics during the first few decades of the 20th century. So, Hristo Botev's agrarian socialism will come to be very influential, but that is for later. For now, Botev was still just a young kid skipping his classes to learn about agrarian socialism. So, even though Botev was being quite productive while he was skipping his classes, he was still skipping his classes, and also, you know, hanging out with dangerous revolutionaries. So Botev was eventually kicked out of boarding school and given a one-way ticket to go on home to Bulgaria, please. Though after getting kicked out of school, Botev would not go home, but he would, like so many other radical Bulgarians, instead run away to Romania, where he planned to join up with Georgi Rukovsky's community of emigre revolutionaries. But Botev would arrive in Bucharest basically just in time to attend Rukovsky's funeral, so he did not really ever get to work with his revolutionary and literary hero. So, Hristo Botev and Vasil Levski both arrived in Bucharest around the same time, in late 1867, early 1868. And when they met, the two would become fast friends as they bonded over their shared revolutionary ideals, their love for Slavic literature, and their similarly restless spirits. And as the two of them began to become somewhat disillusioned with the state of the emigre scene in Bucharest in the immediate wake of Rukovsky's death, Botev and Levski, who were also similarly out of money at this point, would actually end up living together for several months in an abandoned windmill on the outskirts of Bucharest. And during this time, the bond between Levski and Botev really solidified, and they began to dream and plan and just generally discuss what the future course of the Bulgarian revolutionary movement should be. At the end of 1868, Botev and Levski would part ways and leave their home in the abandoned windmill behind, as Botev moved to southern Russia, where he would become a radical journalist, while Levski crossed the Danube back into Bulgaria, where he would once again live a life on the run as a fugitive wanted by the Ottoman authorities. And Levski would at this point really begin to put his new revolutionary ideas into practice, as he famously embarked on his grand tour of Ottoman Bulgaria. During the winter months of early 1869, Levski traveled from town to town and made early connections with many different Bulgarian communities. And Levski was beginning to find that there were actually a good number of people within these communities who were sympathetic to the revolutionary cause. And importantly, Levski spent a ton of time really listening to the grievances of everyday Bulgarians, something that earlier revolutionaries had not really done. And after this tour, Levski returned to Romania, where he reported all that he had learned to his fellow emigres in Bucharest. And while in Bucharest, Levski would then help to form a provisional government under the leadership of a group of prominent Bulgarians living in exile. And Levski then headed back to Bulgaria to begin another tour of the country, except this time he carried along with him an official proclamation from this newly formed provisional government. Now, this provisional government basically had no power whatsoever and was really just a few dudes proclaiming themselves a sovereign authority. But, you know, sometimes you gotta fake it till you make it. And this proclamation from the provisional government really did heighten the legitimacy of Levski in the eyes of many of the Bulgarians he was connecting with. And so it was during this second tour of Bulgaria that Levski went beyond just simply meeting with and learning from different Bulgarian communities. Levski was now actually getting people to sign on to his revolutionary program, and he began to set up local revolutionary committees in towns all across Bulgaria. And while Levski was busy building his revolutionary network and dodging the Ottoman authorities in Bulgaria proper, there were some important developments happening amongst the exiles over in Bucharest. and these developments mainly centered around the emergence of a new literary voice, making waves within the Bulgarian National Revival. So, let's introduce the third revolutionary hero of today's episode, Lubin Karavelov. Like Hristo Botev, Lubin Karavelov had spent time early in his life in the Russian Empire, and as an academic, he had actually served on the history faculty at the University of Moscow for a few years. And also like Botev, Karavelov fell in with the radical Narodists, who were pitching their revolutionary program of agrarian socialism centered around the idealized peasant commune. Now, Karavelov was a good bit older than Botev when he was rubbing shoulders with the Narodists. Karavelov was in his mid-20s when he lived in Russia, while Botev was just a teenager. And so Karavelov was already making a name for himself as a writer during this time. And in his writings, he was beginning to apply many of the ideas from Russian agrarian socialism to the Bulgarian context. And in a line similar to the conclusions Levski had recently been coming to, the Narodists believed that the peasantry needed to be educated before they could join in on a revolutionary struggle for their liberation. And Karavelov would take this idea and run with it, and he became a major advocate for sending revolutionary educators, or apostles as he began to call them, into the Bulgarian heartland in order to radicalize the population and prepare them for a mass uprising. And then once Karavelov had also run afoul of the Russian authorities, he would eventually make his way to Bucharest. Though Karavelov's initial arrival in the Romanian capital in 1869 was a bit different than the arrival of Levski and Botev, who had been forced to live in an abandoned windmill. Karavelov, on the other hand, was already at this point a well-established literary figure, having written many popular poems, short stories, and ethnographies on Bulgarian culture and folklore. So, as a well-renowned writer within the Bulgarian National Revival, Karavelov quickly made a splash amongst the emigre revolutionaries in Romania. So, in late 1869, Karavelov would start up a newspaper called Freedom, and it would be this publication under the leadership of Karavelov, really more than anything else, that would begin to bring together this new generation of Bulgarian revolutionaries, as Botev, Levski, and many other young radicals would read and contribute to Karavelov's publication. And then Karavelov would build on the popularity of his newspaper to organize the establishment of a new revolutionary group in 1870, based in Bucharest, which would come to be called the Bulgarian Revolutionary Central Committee, or the BRCC. And over the next few years, the BRCC, under the leadership of Karavelov, will become the real center of gravity within the emigre community of Bucharest. Now, at this same time, Vasil Levski had been busy organizing his own revolutionary organization that was based in the city of Lovich in central Bulgaria. This committee, dubbed the Internal Revolutionary Organization, or the IRO, was really Levski's baby, as it sought to coordinate the efforts of the many smaller local communities that Levski himself had helped to establish throughout Bulgaria over the past several years. So, throughout 1870 and 1871, there were these two separate committees fighting for Bulgarian liberation. And even though they were certainly aware of each other and corresponded with each other, they still operated independently of one another and really did different kinds of revolutionary work. The BRCC in Bucharest would publish pamphlets and newspapers and make connections with important diplomats, as well as with fellow Bulgarian exiles living in Romania, Serbia, and southern Russia. Then, Levski's IRO in Lovich focused on laying the groundwork for a future uprising in Bulgaria by purchasing weapons, training local revolutionaries, courting important Bulgarian leaders to see if they might lend their wealth and status to the cause, and of course, carrying on Levski's great mission of educating and radicalizing the Bulgarian peasantry. Like we said, these two committees were separate, but they were in contact with one another, mainly through Levski, who was an official member of the BRCC, and who would travel to Bucharest from time to time to report back to Karavelov and the other emigre leaders. But there was this latent tension between the two groups, which centered around their differing beliefs on how best to launch an uprising in Bulgaria. Karavelov felt that it was essential to gain the support of a powerful foreign ally, with mighty Russia being the preferred partner. But, you know, Serbia would do in a pinch. Levski strongly disagreed with this position, and he insisted that true liberation could only be achieved by Bulgarians themselves, which is why Levski spent his time and effort working inside Bulgaria itself, laying the groundwork for an uprising amongst the people actually living in Ottoman Bulgaria. But even though he disagreed with some of the tactics of the BRCC, Levski was a practical guy, and his general instinct had always been to unite rather than to divide. So, in 1872, Levski would attempt to reconcile these two spheres of the Bulgarian revolutionary scene by calling for a general assembly in Bucharest. So Levski went around to the different local committees in Bulgaria and handed out invitations to this assembly. To ensure secrecy and to prevent infiltration from the authorities, Levski gave the leaders of the local committees one half of a piece of torn paper, while Levski kept the other half. Then, in order for these representatives to be accepted to the Bucharest Assembly, they would have to present their piece of paper and match it up with Levski's. A good handful of these local leaders were able to make it to Bucharest, and the assembly began meeting in May of 1872. During this general assembly, it was decided that Levski's internal revolutionary organization would officially be folded into the larger structure of the BRCC. And then, those present at the assembly famously swore an oath on a Bible, a knife, and a revolver. In this oath, each member swore to, quote, give my life and possessions to the sacred cause. And they swore to uphold the secrecy of the organization, and all agreed that if, quote, I become a traitor or a criminal, I agree to be pierced through with the weapons of this sworn company. So yeah, things are getting real. And with the swearing of this oath, the BRCC officially reconciled the two worlds of the Bulgarian Revolution, bringing together Levski's network of local Bulgarian committees with Karavelov's network of emigre revolutionaries. And as the principal leaders of the assembly, Karavelov would be elected as chairman, and therefore as the official leader of the BRCC, while Levski was given the slightly more ephemeral title of Chief Apostle, which pointed to Levski's somewhat mystical role in all of this as kind of the indispensable man, whose influence it seems could simply not be contained within an official bureaucratic title like chairman. Levski was the apostle, and he would continue to spread the gospel of national liberation throughout Bulgaria, while Karavelov, as chairman, would spend his time continuing to reach out to leaders of other countries, primarily Serbia and Russia, to try to gain support for the Bulgarian cause. And then, before Levski headed back to Bulgaria, he would help his old friend Hristo Botev get settled back in Bucharest. And as we'll see, Botev's influence from this point on will steadily begin to grow amongst the Bucharest wing of the BRCC. But just as the Bulgarian Revolution was really beginning to get some legs under it with the merger of Levski's IRO with the BRCC, disaster would strike at the end of 1872 when Vasil Levski was suddenly captured by Ottoman authorities in a village just outside of Lovich. When he had returned to Bulgaria after attending the BRCC assembly, Levski had picked right back up where he had left off, raising awareness and money for the revolutionary cause. But at this point, money was becoming a bit tight, and the Central Committee in Lovich had recently been forced to rely more and more on expropriation to fund their activities, which is to say they had begun robbing people more often. And for anyone who knows a bit about revolutionary movements of the 20th century, armed robbery will become a very common way for revolutionaries to stay afloat. And then, of course, as we saw with the Greek Revolution, nearly all of those guys were to some extent participating in banditry or piracy. So this is really just business as usual for revolutionaries of this period. But robbery is dangerous, and it brings on lots of unwanted attention from the authorities. So a man named Dimitar Obshti, who was a very experienced revolutionary fighter, who had actually fought in Italy alongside the great Giuseppe Garibaldi and had taken part in the Cretan Revolt of 1866, had come to Bucharest to help Karavelov form the BRCC in its early days. Then, Karavelov had sent Obshti into Bulgaria to act as somewhat of a right-hand man for Levski, as Obshti had the potential to be a very useful resource for Levski as an experienced revolutionary fighter. But Obshtey would prove to be a bit of a wild card, and to put it simply, he was just not great at taking orders, and he would often lead missions, like assassination attempts and armed robberies, without consulting Levski and his central committee. In the fall of 1863, Obshtey organized an armed robbery of a postal convoy that was being transported through a rugged mountain pass in the Balkan Mountains. The main purpose of this robbery was to secure the funds needed to buy more weapons in preparation for the future uprising being planned by the BRCC. But Obshtey had not gotten permission to do any of this from the BRCC's leadership. He was just kind of acting on his own. The robbery was initially a success, as Obshtey and his fellow bandits successfully secured the money and initially got away. However, the Ottomans had a hunch that there was potentially more behind this robbery and that it might be connected to a broader revolutionary network. So they committed a lot of people and resources towards catching the perpetrators. And towards the end of 1872, Obshtey and several of his comrades were ultimately tracked down by the Ottomans. And these captures then ended up creating a sort of cascade of revelations for the Ottoman authorities, and they were able to attain more and more information from these prisoners about Levski's revolutionary network centered in Lovich. Amidst a whirlwind of confessions, the Ottomans were able to put together a much more comprehensive criminal profile of Vasil Levski, and so the revolutionary leader was suddenly in much greater danger of being captured. Realizing this, Levski decided that he needed to escape back to Bucharest until things settled down a bit. However, he made the fateful decision to stop in Lovich on his way back to Romania in order to secure some incriminating documents that were being stored there and that, if found by the authorities, would be devastating for the BRCC. After grabbing these documents, Levski was hiding in a small town on the outskirts of Lovich when he was suddenly approached by Ottoman officials who began to question him. Now, Levski was at this point a master at weaseling his way out of these sorts of situations, and his favorite strategy was just to start confidently talking to Ottoman officials as if he already knew them. And this had actually worked pretty well in the past, as there were several recorded instances in which Levski was on the verge of being caught until he basically talked so openly and so confidently with his would-be captors that they found it impossible that this guy who had just walked right up to them and was like, "Hey, Pete, how's your mother?" could possibly be a wanted fugitive. I mean, if this really was the leader of a secret revolutionary organization, wouldn't he run away? And so Levski started working his charm and nearly got out of this one as well. But since the capture of Obshtey and his comrades, there were just too many details now known about Levski, including details about his physical appearance. So these Ottoman officials were fairly certain that they had just captured the notorious revolutionary leader. There are a few different theories out there about how the Ottomans knew of Levski's whereabouts, but the most commonly told story originates from Karavelov, who claimed that a local priest betrayed Levski's hiding place to the authorities. But regardless of who ultimately betrayed him, Levski was, after years of being on the run, finally captured on December 27, 1872. After he was detained, Levski would be interrogated for a couple months while the Ottoman authorities tried to just double confirm that they did indeed have the leader of the Lovich Central Committee. During these interrogations, Levski would spend his time mostly just messing around with his interrogators. There was one instance in which an official was trying to confirm his name, and Levski told them, "My father used to call me Petko." Then they followed up and said, "So your name is Petko?" And then he replied, "Alas, my name is not Petko." Then, when Levski was asked who his fellow revolutionary conspirators were, he famously responded, "The whole Bulgarian people are my comrades. I have worked with the whole people, and I know nobody." So yeah, to the bitter end, Levski was sticking it to the Ottoman authorities in every way he could. But this little cat-and-mouse game Levski was playing with his interrogators was really just delaying the inevitable. Because as we've noted, the authorities had now put together a pretty comprehensive profile of Levski, and they were becoming more and more certain of who they were talking to. So, after a brief trial, Levski would ultimately be sentenced to death. And on February 18, 1873, Vasil Levski was hanged. The ultimate legacy and influence of Vasil Levski is hard to quantify, and he would become an absolute legend, not only amongst Bulgarians, but amongst many revolutionaries throughout the Ottoman Empire and beyond, who looked towards Levski as a model revolutionary who selflessly died for the cause of national liberation. But in more concrete terms, Vasil Levski had successfully taken the revolutionary movement out of the émigré circles in Bucharest and brought it to the heartland of Ottoman Bulgaria. And as we will see next week, this effort to grow the movement within Bulgaria itself will become more and more important as Lubin Keravelov, Hristo Botev, and other members of the BRCC carry on Levski's work and continue to lay plans for a mass uprising in Bulgaria. And though it will not happen in the way that these revolutionary leaders initially intended, a mass uprising will indeed break out in the spring of 1876. And the dramatic events that followed this revolt will ultimately bring to a head the so-called Great Eastern Crisis. Through many twists and turns, this international crisis will bring about the great power intervention long hoped for by Keravelov and the BRCC, as the Russians will declare war on the Ottomans. And this war will see the people of the Balkans, Romanians, Serbs, Montenegrins, Bulgarians, for a moment all coming together to fight alongside the Russians as they struggled for their independence from the Ottoman Empire. And ultimately, this independence will be won, with Romania, Serbia, and Montenegro all finally earning their full and complete independence as nation-states, and with Bulgaria earning de facto independence as an autonomous principality, with de jure independence just around the corner. So join me next week as the BRCC launches the April Uprising of 1876 and knocks down the first domino of the Great Eastern Crisis.